Jeremy.
Hey, how are you?
Hi.
Good.
I'm believing it's only Wednesday at this point.
Okay, so now it's recording. So when you're here, you would have the ability. We don't really need to do the video of it unless you want to. If you want to, and you could locate it in such a way where it would capture, if that would help you to be able to identify who's speaking or things like that, that would maybe be useful. Or you can just stop video. The important thing to not do, don't stop recording.
Right, don't stop. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So when the meeting is over, you can just hit end meeting. It'll open up a little dialogue box that'll say, would you like to convert this? Because it's going to convert to different file formats. So say yes. And even if you had to close the laptop case, all it'll do is you'll just pause the conversion until when we open it back up. So by default, just hit yes so that it'll actually start. And you don't have to sit and wait around until it's fully converted and then close everything down. But typically, by the time you would clean everything up and be ready to leave, it would convert it. And if not, don't worry about it. Now, do you have a key to the office yet?
No.
Okay, so I need to check with Gina about that for you. So because this will need to come back in the office after you're done. She may still be there, but I'm not going to be. I have piano lessons on Wednesday night, so I have to go home and get some piano lessons. So.
Is there anyone going to be calling you?
I don't believe, Matthew, anyone calling into the meeting today? Okay, so this is really just for the purpose of recording. Okay. So if you, yeah, I mean, it should, the audio is pretty good last time, did you?
It was okay, yeah.
Okay.
We also were investing, I mean, the need factory, the need factory office is a much smaller too.
All right, so here's the bag. I just set it right here. And I'll go see about getting you.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that. Was there anything?
I don't believe
that. We had
I've got mine.
I just have a dim.
Yeah.
Before, we don't run out of the coin, so.
But
I think
we're
all
just
have
to move up. No. Exactly.
Oh, careful.
You're talking about, and
the chairs are
being stacked. That security board is one of their biggest, and it looked to be a concerted effort by a professional organization that's brought into one run. In fact, there's suspicion that was a
strange.
And it was probably
never on a blue
yes. Or
other get your own video recording. It's okay.
Organizations
I mean,
yeah, because there's lower security
as well. Well, I don't mind. So
well, actually, I might not. This is smaller. So it'll start. It won't take me as long.
It's less.
We do try to say capture your phone, right?
Report.
Say, oh, Jeremy, Richard, Gabe, Michelle, etc. So
they did figure out how they got it. That was good. It's not what I was trying to say.
I can't be here. She daughter can't be here. Sarah is sick. She's in class today. Yes, yeah, so she heard that episode high fever, so she is unable to attend. She emailed me. So
when I
think o'clock. She said she said today was her first day. Was that she missed the last. Yes, my day. Yes. Because she's meeting to try and make that up. So we know that's four.
Yeah.
Well, we need 18 members, so we need five. We're not going to get there yet. There you go. I have three people who aren't going to be here, and I have two people who are going to be late. So we're going to where are you going? Nothing actually going to be going on.
So then we need that?
Yes, we still going to have minutes. All right. So I'm going to give her a minute or two, and then get started.
Notice how the three people that are here are three people appointed by the UA.
All the children join us on the show up.
But here, I know that there have been cases where
did you say that it's a beautiful day or a different gun?
I would. I just haven't been where you got that from, but then I
profile was
very nice. I'm trying to soak it, like I said, I'm trying to soak it all in.
Yeah, well, when it becomes fall, I think it becomes, I think fall is a pretty long time of year here.
I would say it's my favorite, like, so
just generally.
I think my fall is positive.
All right.
Okay.
We're all jumping. Matthew, what are your whole supposed to have those?
This is actually a placard that I carry around. The business school gives them out to people. But we should have placards. I'm actually, you know, it's 4:36. We don't do not a quorum, but that means that I have a number of people who are sick or conflict, so I suspect we might not get one. We're just going to get started in terms of, we don't actually think that these people are on, so we're having a discussion. And we're 5 minutes, so I will inform the members who aren't here what we talked about. But actually, on placards, I'm going to go out of order then in that case. The first thing that we, the past two meetings have been a little bit scheduled towards the last minute, even turning the agenda out. I must actually confess, I was busy wrapping up my recruiting. I actually accepted a job offer last week, at the end of last week, so I am now, I will be, thank you so much. So I'm all set. And actually, coincidentally, I don't know if you would know or remember Annie O'Toole. She was the grad student trustee for last 2 years ago. Now, gosh. But it's funny, coincidentally, I will actually be at the same law firm she's at, which is for Paul Weiss, which is coincidental because I was emailing her today and I said, it's really quite a small world. But fortunately, because of that, my schedule has more time and I will be checking things up and hopefully we will not be going quite so. So last minute in terms of scheduling. That being said, in terms of scheduling, we have quite a bit on our plate this year, as we talked about last week. And after speaking with a bunch of members, including some who couldn't attend last week, what we think we're going to do is we're going to keep this time slot moving forward. I'll send out a full calendar. But every off week, the off weeks of UA, so this week, 2 weeks from today, et cetera, we'll have a full meeting. The full discussion, the full standard students you meet, and on the weeks of the UA, so that'd be next week, et cetera, you will still have, in essence, a working session. So understanding that some members aren't able to attend every week, and again, that is a high level of commitment that we haven't asked for in the past. Those who are available or have specific interest in what we're discussing, I guess in the detail level, we will have those meetings on the our off weeks, but the weeks of the UA for those who can attend, and that'll be handling more nitty-gritty language. We did that a little bit last year, or once in terms of handling some of the more detailed language for the draft transcript adaptations. And I'm hoping that this will be able to settle into that, especially as we start looking at the code more holistically and we start looking towards doing our overhaul. That being said, we actually, in terms of minutes from last meeting and meeting in spring, I was speaking with the office in terms of, again, accelerating our turnaround time, and also they have to accelerate theirs, so we don't actually have the minutes from April 25th or September 6th yet. Actually, for the ones in April, the office is checking. I checked our agenda. That was when we were doing UHRB applicant screening. So I would suspect, at the very least, the minutes would be a simple page of Gavilan, who was there. We had a recap, approve some minutes, and then went to the executive session. So we're not missing a lot there, but we will get those hopefully by next week, or if not, then the week after. And the meetings from minutes from last week, the same idea. And that moves us on to the first item. It's funny, we do need a form, so we need to vote that for request. The first item on our agenda is UA, what I presume will be UAR1, which is appointment of the UHRB members. As written and as sent out, it is taking the people who had been selected but had let us know beyond the cutoff date in the UA's resolution. We gave the UA executive an emergency appointment as authorized by the code. Our goal, this resolution will confirm them for a full 2-year term. We also had 3 people resign or otherwise resign over the summer. Can we advance it today if we don't have a quorum?
We may choose an email, but this is, in essence, it's very much pro forma, but I believe we will have a quorum in a few moments.
Oh.
So I have people who said they're going to be late, so my hope is we will.
Okay.
If not, great. We'll go to the plan B, especially because this is non-controversial. It should never be controversial.
I was going to say, hopefully it's never controversial.
I say, precisely. But if it did, we had angry people who were here to go well to handle it. But anyway, either way, So that's just to confirm that people who had already been in essence given interim appointments over the summer, and for the two or the three vacancies we have, two students and one staff. I actually was able to touch base with the Office of the Assemblies today. I've reached out to essence the next people on our list, saying a seat is opened up. Are you still interested? Assuming I hear yes, they will be added to the resolution. Still going off of last year's selection. And actually, I'm also very happy to report that at the end of last year, myself, Mr. Kaufman, met with Gina and then Michelle in terms of evaluating the UHRB procedures. We had a lot of good feedback on discussion. And part of that, A, we have some changes we'll be making this year and through the code when we go through our overall process. But on that end, we also, the process of managing who's actually on the boards has been moved from the Office of the JA to the Office of the Assemblies. It makes more logistical sense, and it also allows the OJA to remain more neutral, to avoid any appearances of impropriety, not that there ever were any, but it allows more neutral. So I've told today that has been completed, which is fantastic. It's been actually done faster than I thought it would be. So we'll be able to move forward with that. But that resolution is the same as it has been. We'll simply be adding a paragraph at the bottom saying, due to resignations, the following people are added for our terms. And for these people, they will traditionally be taking up the terms that have been vacated, which also works because the next person on the list, actually one of the students, is graduating, so putting them in for a one-year term. It would be a one-year term either way, so that will make that more convenient. Do you have any questions or concerns on that? Aside from that.
Is our intent going forward when selecting UHRB members to do a yes, no, and then on the yes is an 18 and a 18, essentially, so that we have that backup?
What we've done in the past, and this is also not best practice, what we would do is we would, in essence, have an alternate list, which so that we would disapprove a couple an over allotment and then tell the OJA, if someone resigns, pick almost at random. That, for a lot of reasons, is not a great idea. A, it was a child of convenience. It really wasn't anywhere written, which we did it, and it worked. Again, there was never an issue with it, but in terms of trying to get to actually do what our documents say, if we don't want to, then we'll amend the documents. So we used to do that. What we discussed in the spring was having the ranked list, which we've been doing over the past couple of years, so that the CJC will go through, put everyone in, everyone will be appointed, people have the option to renew, they will then be approved to renew. And from there, if there's a vacancy again in the fall, we would simply reevaluate and say, okay, we have X vacancies, we're pushing them through. And then so that's the mid of spring resolution, which is the standard one, the fall, which is the cleanup. And then unless there's a massive number of vacancies, we would simply be able to move through the board because we only have about 3 or 4 months of each time between before this fall and when we're going back to the UHRB anyways. Any other questions?
I was just gonna say, like, the thing that's really important from my point of view is that the chair is going to require training of all board members. And so one of the things that the temporary is that they're the chairs were having to train them right before they were here in the matter. So, I appreciate the UA's effort to film for the.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. And once we get a quorum, we'll come back to that just to vote it out of committee. But that brings us to the second point on our agenda. And this one actually is going to take some, I believe, less discussion, which is looking at the, this I'm describing the housekeeping, the low hanging fruit, the quicker code changes. So, after actually, this will be talked about briefly in the executive session at the end. After speaking with the chair of the UA, and
just like Gabe.
We
don't even have a forum.
So after speaking with Gabe and learning some information, we're going to be changing, and hearing a little bit, we've seen some feedback from the administration, we're going to be changing slightly how we're going to be proceeding in terms of going through the code. And the plan that seems to be now making most sense would be take a crack through, fix all the quick band-aid issues, such as the length of suspensions. Actually, another one would be there's another issue with the JA reappointment process. It's nothing major, nothing controversial, but it's to go through, fix the immediate ones, as well as the exceptional hanging fruit, and then break off and start, frankly, looking at the code more holistically. And we'll all talk in more detail, specifically in that executive session. But for this, Michelle was kind enough to have to circulate some draft language, which I believe I picked up this morning. Again, if it didn't have a chance to look at it, we can, I don't think we printed a copy, moving forward, we'll have copies of it to discuss those, and then hopefully, once these are passed, move into the full code. But I guess, Michelle, if I can either introduce them or if you'd like to run through them, it doesn't.
I just kind of cut a thought what we spoke about last week. And so on the left is the current language, on the right is the proposed language. And I sorted it into kind of the three kind of fruit areas. I think one might be, two might be a little bit more low hanging. But the first is to address the suspension length. But in order to do that, we talked about changing the reporting length at all. So in order to kind of change the suspension length for the student organizations, which is highlighted in yellow, this is the exact language that I copied from the student section of the volunteers, we would just make the current D move down to E, add in that language of D, and then extending the jurisdictional timeline for university registered organizations for 3 calendar years. We talked about that being because it's equivalent for hazing and stuff like that.
I apologize. Actually, I spoke to Gina this morning. You will be on the listserv, I believe, almost immediately or hopefully today. I will forward it to you right now.
Yeah, it will do it good.
I can give you my copy.
Just can't get one.
Those are copies.
Is it updated as of June 27th?
No, it's January, but that's June. That's what was passed.
Well, it was passed in December, and then the president accepted it. Yeah, that's what
I mean. Either way, as of January, it would incorporate the most recent quarter amendments, which are the outdoors based ones. So if there's any, in general, that we have time, we're a little more flexible about form. There's a couple things actually that I had on my list that, again, being busy, I will be putting through section next week to draft some language to A, incorporate this, and B, just track it. The one that I had remembered was A, I can give the details now, the procedure for reappointing the JA. Previously in the code, there was a 2-term limit on the term of the JA, harking back to a different era where it was a faculty member or the role was different, so there was a term cap. The UA removed that when Mary Beth Grant had been here for 4 years in the early 2000s. However, checking some old language, and if I remember correctly, looks like when they removed it, they didn't reword the reappointment process correctly, which is why, as the language currently stands, it mandates...
It's being recorded anyways.
At this point, I'm just providing context. If you feel like you'd like to, that's absolutely fine. We're not talking about your actual report, we're just the process.
Okay.
So, just to clarify, this is about the process of the code. It says you can be reappointed, which we've always done. But it says also, the language read literally says you must convene a search committee, and then would imply that you go through a search process and then reappoint. That has never been our practice. As far as I can see, that has not been our practice. I don't believe we're going to start. But in terms of fixing the language for that, that's it. A, it's aligning practices with the code. We're not going to start doing that, being perfectly honest, unless there's a burning desire upon someone to have a discussion about it. But to fix that, and there's also been some discussion in terms of that process. Should we have, there was talk in the prior JA, should there be feedback provided to the JA in writing, perhaps, but from the community? So again, also, should this be the 2-year reappointment term be an opportunity for that? But either way, just to clarify that language, say that we don't need to convene a full search to run through this, just to have that language just for the sake of, because that's not what we do, and it is A, low hanging, and B, immediate.
Can I add something? Of course, yeah. Do you guys get what the issue is, or like is that clear? Because it's very confusing to me, and I just want to make sure that before we go on, that we're on the same page as to why the Office of the Assemblies has asked that we amend the code. Do you understand? So, okay, do you get it, Richard? Or do you need me to try to clarify?
Well, you mean revising the code with respect to organizations?
No, so basically, so this has to do with the appointment of the judicial administrator.
If Richard can get this, we want to give it 2 minutes, half the time, or take it to a couple minute break.
I got nothing.
Okay. So in that case, long story short, the current code, the way it's written, says that the JA can be reappointed. We always have reappointed the JA, but that to do so, you must convene a search committee to, in essence, recommend the reappointments, fill in some of the gaps. It appears to be historical oversight back when we used to be term limit on the JA. When we removed the term limit on the JA, the assembly and, for some other reason, council office, president office, no one caught that there was a, essence that the procedure and such, that procedure remained in place. We haven't followed that procedure for years, but in terms of ensuring that we actually comply with the code, to simply correct it to our current procedure of the JA may be reappointed. Again, if for some reason they weren't reappointed, you have to go through the search process. But to instead of making it mandatory to have a search, to simply ask for reappointment, again, knowing that the resources consumed by a search and the fact that it's just not practical.
So to make sure that I understand correctly, the current practice is essentially a call for conference. Everybody says, yay, let's reappoint. Cool. If that doesn't happen, then we look at developing a search committee.
That's the current case. In this case, it is an informal. That's the process we follow.
That's what I wanted to.
Yeah, so the president will ask, say, we'd like to reappoint. The chair would get a letter, actually, either now or in the spring, saying, very pleased, we're happy to work with you, blah, 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 blah. That's very concerned. They would ask you to reappoint. We would then, the UA would then talk about it. You would solicit public comment saying, is there an issue? I don't think we've ever gotten any. Actually, I think we got one statement of praise once, which was nice to hear. But then the UA would then vote on it once. Well, sometimes.
But it's a reasonable process that we already follow, and we just need to correct it.
Yeah. So the issue is technically we would be not in compliance with the code if come November 1st I have not convened a search committee for a position that is not vacant. And that is the issue.
Yep.
And I thank Michelle for pointing, bringing our attention to that issue. Or by contacting Gina, brought our attention to the issue.
The intention, I understand Michelle's concern about
perception. Very reasonable.
Either way, this is, I would cut this as a typo because it looks like they write it,
takes
the draft to fix it. So we will, again, mop this up in our initial code change combined with this. I don't anticipate that being an issue. We may even, there were some concerns about, feedback, so we can, I will speak to some people, we will write some draft language for next meeting, but I don't anticipate it being a controversial or being an issue. And I think it's going to be easily fixed well before the end of October.
Can I just add something to that? So the code does say October.
Right.
And so, in fairness to anyone who holds this position, I would say that October deadline is really important because, for example, I signed a lease coming up.
Right.
Like and so I do recognize that if you guys are changing the language, I think setting a specific timeline would be fair just in case the university does have to do a surgery. So.
Yes, well, and previewing what I was looking at, even speaking with Gabe yesterday, was just saying along the lines of within 3 months or within 6 months, or to have some, I think 3 months is probably, but I think it's a long 3 months, is, I guess, again, trying to provide the lead time of understanding the fact that the realities of living and having to, in essence, go up for appointment, but to balance that also with my also looking at it. The JAs used to have a term that I believe was January 1 to January 1, which would make an October deadline make more sense, being that the JA term has been decoupled from where it used to be. Even actually, you may remember back when we were actually appointing you, there was a miscommunication between myself and the Office of the President because of President Garrett's death in terms of what the plan was. That's not ironed out, but now, especially now that it's completely decoupled from what it used to be, it would make sense just to say, okay, whatever that floating term happens to be, stick a clock on it from there. Obviously, understanding for the summer and other things. But something along those lines, I suspect will wind up.
It'll be similar to the process for the appointment of the ombudsman, is what I anticipate, which has worked pretty well.
Yes. That being said, the one thing also that immediately jumps out that I think would do well to add to this, I think it's the quick cleanup of the code, was actually brought up last year with Mr. McBride hearing in terms of that, again, is confidential information, to release confidential information, is it a violation of the code, you could argue it is if you were to go through violating a policy and then violating a data security policy. That being said, there was I was speaking with a number of people, including some administration, saying this is concerning. That being said, understand the balance in that you don't want people to just say verbally, oh, this is confidential. So again, determining if we will, how we want to put that in there. Again, it's a simple, the way that we discussed it in the spring was along the lines of, if something is in writing, or you are notified in writing that it's confidential, not even to sign an agreement, but if you were notified, and there is, again, to find the balance, you don't want to overthink it as it's overclassified.
Right.
But as to have someone, if you're told in writing that it's confidential, to release it or misuse it in a way that's not authorized would be a violation of the code, to fill that hole. Because even if the hearing board said, what you did was wrong, not a violation of the code, it would appear that that is a hole in the code that is worth plugging in.
One of the other things that brought to mind for me, and maybe this is coming from a non-legal background, maybe this is just me, but the use of the term university official, which is used throughout the code, is never explicitly defined in the code that I can find. I can read it in context in section 2, I think. It sounds like the intent is the Board of Trustees and their designated enforcement officials, I think is the word. But I think that they're, for my sake, because this gets used over and over again in the code as university officials, I think that there should be a clear understanding of what that term means to the average person on campus.
Absolutely, and it fits also into the idea that we are going to be taking a stem to stern look at the code. And again, in terms of definitionally, and I mean, that, again, as someone who has some legal training, I can tell you that understanding the principal and agent relationship of a corporation, which the university did, that is 100% roughly correct. But if you don't, again, the same idea, if you don't have the legal training or the background, not clear. And it's a simple fix, and it's one that I think we'll do, we will do, and we put in. And it's also, to me, it also further reinforces why we need to clarify. And so that's another small thing that, again, assuming we can fix the help language quickly, I think we can just hit that in because it is a hole to plug it, and then again, have the short list of really easy band-aids and send it through. The other one actually is also referenced in our the transportation policy. Is the university is moving away from indefinite suspensions, either you're expelled or you have a definite term. And again, just to cut that out, again, if we to me it's low hanging out fruit, and the practice has already shifted, we're gonna in essence do one final crack of the current code and say, just for symbolic and practical purposes, here it is, before we go into, I guess, the deep dive. That I would add a list. Again, we will go through and I will have language for us later. And actually taking a brief moment, noting that we now have a quorum and that we had two members enter. Just to summarize where we were, we went through just the minutes, which we don't actually have at this point. We're hopefully have next meeting, so you didn't miss anything there. In terms of full-time, a permanent meeting time, we are going to be keeping roughly this time slot, having full meetings every 2 weeks, so we won't be off weeks from the UA, so this week, 2 weeks from today, et cetera. But because we're looking at a relatively large, a very large code, a deep look at the code, we'll be holding working sessions on the other weeks. So in essence, there will be some form of meeting or another every week. For those, the working sessions are again, for those who can attend, understanding that it's a very large time commitment. But we'll be holding those. We also will be, after today, I'll have hopefully a full-time permanent schedule out for the committee so we can plan better. And we will hopefully be able to move towards a more standardized schedule in terms of materials. And that is that. We also spoke briefly about the first resolution, which was just the confirmation of the emergency appointees who were made, as well as noting that we have two or three vacancies, two students, one staff that opened up over the summer due to resignations. And just saying we're going to plug names from the next stop on our ranked list into those and send it off to the UA for confirmation on hopefully on Tuesday, or is on the docket, so we voted on not this Tuesday, but the next UA meeting. So if there aren't any questions, actually, I would ask if you go back out of order, go back to UA, the reappointment mechanism, so we can vote it through. there's any questions, concerns, or consent to that. Hearing none, switching back to that. If there's no questions and the speaker's exhausted, the chair will put the question. All those in favor of voting UA Resolution X, which would likely be one, which is the, which actual language is UA Resolution X, appointing University Hearing Review Board members for the 2017-2018 academic year. All those in favor, please raise your flag or hand. Flag of death. All those opposed? All abstentions? Chair abstains. I vote 5-0-1. This passes. Thank you very much. 4-0 in party. Thank you. This passes. Thank you very much. I will then convey it to the leadership of the UA, so it will be placed on the agenda. Yes. Getting back to our regularly scheduled program at this point, in terms of low-hanging fruit, I've gone through the ones that I think are the most basic ones for me, the ones that came to mind immediately. I have a list of things. I'm just going to run through real quick and see if any other almost obvious changes that we could group with this. And the one thing I did notice and is actually on the draft provided from Michelle very graciously. It's adding under page 3 of the draft. It's adding to refuse to comply with any lawful order of a clearly identified emergency official. To Title III, Article 2, that language, as I currently recall, currently appears in the Regulations for Maintenance of Public Order. Actually, I'm speaking to some key members, there was actually talk of to amend that in that section to clarify that that applies to that section, because there was some concern that it wasn't clear that section of the code applies to those areas in terms of regulation of public order. Considering that I've received oral and written comment and people expressing concerns about the way that's drafted in terms of the regulations of public order, I think that we may be better served to pull that out of the low-hanging fruit, because there is, I mean, from the fact that I've heard comments about it, and I don't hear comments about much as chair, to be honest, tells me that there are people who are interested in that. And while I think we're looking at the code holistically, this is a conversation that we need to have in detail and will have in detail. Our goal is to hit the low-hanging fruit and hunt them out before we end up moving into the review. That's just something that I would note and put forward to the committee. Michelle?
I would say that's, I use that language because Title IV, that's the draft. We did kind of look at some of our others, like COFI schools and our peer institutions for some of that language, but the reason that we do need to add some sort of non-compliance into Title III is because the public hearing from Mitch McBroad says that non-compliance is only available in Title IV. There was at one time a non-compliance in Title III and Title IV, and it was removed. Mm-hmm. And so if we're taking the part about my office immediately suspending someone if they don't have their sanctions done, I have no way to enforce that sanction. So I do need some sort of non-compliance language in Title III.
Okay. And again, I don't have issues with having some of that. Just the way it's worded, that it mirrors elsewhere in the code, something that I noticed and that I received concerns about, will need to tweak it and possibly narrow it to make sure that it still can accomplish its goal, but it won't necessarily end up being used over broadly. That's actually the concern with the Title IV one, is that it was being used as a catch-all and too broad, and that was, again, and a valid concern. So the question is, how do we narrow it so that it obviously you're not having people completely ignoring what your office is telling them or what their sanctions are, but we can still also avoid over enforcement. So next in the speaker list is Richard.
So we're postponing
it. So this is discussion. We don't have actual, next for our next meeting next week or the working session, I'm going to type up a mock resolution as well as a couple of changes I had and start integrating them. I just wanted to bring this forward. And this is all proposal at this point, but noting that this language mirrors the language used in regulation of public order, and that there were concerns expressed about that language, so that in terms of classifying it as a non-controversial low-hanging fruit, we need to, in my estimation, narrow it so it can accomplish the goal of, by changing the code right now says if you violate an interim order or your order, the JA office has to, in essence, immediately suspend you. One of these changes is making it so they have some discretion, but to allow them, to in essence allow, has to have an enforcement mechanism in the code in that section. That's the reason that this is a company request.
So Matthew, setting that aside for a moment, we're going to have that discussion. Don't you want to do the other low-hanging fruit first?
Yes.
Get it passed And then we'll talk about this.
Well, it's, maybe I should clarify. What we're doing, and it's funny, this is parcel part of the executive, what we're going to talk about the executive session. But with the current plan, especially with the JA reappointment, the language of the reappointment, actually for the new people who walked in, the language of the reappointment implies, or seems to actually say, that we can reappoint, which we always have done, but that it requires that in October we need to convene a search committee that would, in essence, recommend the reappointment. We haven't done that, and I don't think my recollection and the records I could find. So in terms of aligning practices, we're going to be fixing that, and that seems to fit nicely into the low-hanging fruit. But after having a conversation with Gabe and also receiving some information from the university's administration, our plans for, in essence, looking at the code holistically have been, I would tweak slightly. I'll provide, again, more details in the executive session. So the current, I guess, sketch is run through, take one last crack at the current code and say, what are the things that we can say are non-controversial or that need to be fixed now? So we have a short list of this and a couple other ones that I mentioned that can go in the current code. And then after that, go through and do a more of a deep dive of the code holistically and say, how are we going to overhaul it? And the concerns about the disobeying the university official, which currently live in the public order, is Michelle mentioned, those were removed from Title III, which is the general offenses. I had to pull out the decorative for why that was. I can guess, but I wouldn't want to do that until I have those records. So to look at that holistically would be done when we get to the review. But considering that right now the code says if you violate interim order, you must be suspended.
I think this section makes very good. So I don't think it's low-hanging fruit.
Well, it's a little roundabout. What I'm saying is this language is going to be narrowed heavily, and Michelle, if you want to actually jump in.
Can I just say, like, I'm not married to that language. I was just using the same language because it was the starting point of the conversation. And so, like I said, I looked at some of our other schools, and they have some that have, like, almost exact language and others. But I just wanted to do that because I know that Reese said she wanted to have something as a starting point to discuss. So, so whether it's non-compliance with sanctions applied by the offices of the judicial share the conduct process or the 6.4 process, that's fine. But I didn't want to not be forthright and use different language without having
to. That's fine. I just wondered. So we're not going to. There were things you wanted to adopt today.
No, there are not. The only thing we needed to adopt today.
That's what
I apologize. The only thing we needed to adopt today was the UHRB confirmations because it is timely and because that is. In terms of the lowest level of non-controversial I can think of, it would hit that. But this is a proposal, again, in terms of the low-hanging fruit, because directly above it, we're changing instead of a requirement that if you violate an interim order or otherwise remedy, the GA has the potential, has discretion, instead of being required to suspend, they have discretion. Again, in this case, I would argue discretion is good to have. But because of that, we need to have, in essence, an accompanying provision that will say to violate a sanction is also, because we're changing from must to a discretion, to, in essence, have something there, which is why, I think Michelle said, to violate 6.4 interim order or an order from the JA would be considered a violation. Again, actually getting rid of this draft language and replacing with that, as long as that accomplishes the goal, and obviously we'll finalize the language, I think that's really what we can do.
I'm really sorry, I have to be late. And maybe you all talk about it, sorry, but I don't actually know what we're talking about right now. Because it sounds to me like we're talking about two different things. One is this refusal to follow the law of order, and then you're talking about suspension and the amount of time. So am I missing something?
Actually, Michelle, would you like to?
Yeah, so, maybe you already said
No, that's okay. It's good time to talk about it. So this was what I sent out in the little handouts. Yeah, so... Right now, the current code says that if somebody is late on their sanction, so if they don't turn in their paper.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you just explain to me which part you're talking about right now?
So it's
may versus shall?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing, but isn't that different from the issue of the failure to follow the law?
So here's the thing, though. It goes par and parcel.
Okay.
So if we're going to say that, so because there's not a non-compliance charge in Title III, it is a very severely disproportionate sanction to say if somebody didn't write their paper on time and they didn't turn it in, I have to suspend them immediately. So what I'm asking the CJC and the assembly to consider saying, let's change the really draconian part to say that I have to automatically suspend people. Like, that just is something that doesn't seem quite fair to me at all. But because there would be no, so right now, since McBride hearing, if somebody doesn't do their sanctions, we charge them with obstruction of the code, which doesn't seem quite right, but it's what we have to use because we have a public record that says we can't do non-compliance because it only lived in Title IV. So I'm asking for there to be some language in Title III that talks about non-compliance so that instead of automatically suspending someone, we would charge them with non-compliance and they would have a new case. And so basically in practice what that looks like is if I don't turn in my paper on time, I get charged with a new code charge. And the sanctions for that is that you have to finish your original sanctions and then you get some other sanctions. Sometimes people say it's time management, so we do a time management sanction. So does that kind of make sense on how those two are intertwined?
Well, I suppose, but I'm just reading this language that exists already, and it says, okay, so this is different from the for any violation of the terms of probation committed during probationary period. That suggests where you can may impose additional penalties including suspension or dismissal. Is that not, it does not give you discretion?
Right now, it doesn't. So I've been.
But it just says it. So
the language on the left is what it currently is, and the language on the right is what I would like
it to
be.
No, but it says. Okay, so what's the additional?
Right now, it says the judicial administrator shall notify the university registrar.
Right, right. I got the May part there. And then we've got. Okay, so what is the. And I did actually read this. I'm
sorry. Yeah, no, it's
really confusing. So what is the additional language on the right that's not on the left? Specific language.
So there is no non-compliance language in Title III. And so what I did is just for us to have a starting point for a conversation, I used the language in Title IV, even though Title IV applies to public order. And so it was very clear that, the way that it was drafted with the semicolon, the hearing board said that that provision in Title IV, because of the semicolon, relates only to Title IV. So I started just with that language to say, you know, this is what currently is as language, and so we can. Again, I'm not.
So this is two things that aren't suspension.
So if I may, I think what the way it's currently written, if I understand this correctly, is that the first, and maybe frankly, this should be two paragraphs. The first paragraph is saying, as of now, if you don't comply with your sanction, make sure your paper in late, or frankly, it could be anything small, or it could be frankly huge to your interim suspension, you're suspended, you come back. The JA right now is required to seek to immediately suspend you. That, again, on its face appears draconian, which is why Michelle is asking that we move it so that she has discretion instead of being required to. In essence, you have the ability to weigh the totality of circumstances and use discretion. The second part, which then talks about for violation of any terms of probation, that is a separate, so in essence, assuming you've been placed on probation,
right.
that is a separate issue. But because of the precedent-setting value of the hearing that the McBride hearing in the spring, the part of language says to refuse to comply with lawful order under regulation of public order, that does not apply to Title III. So Michelle is asking for language that would, in essence, say that to violate a lawfully provided sanction by the JA's office or 6.4 or something, I mean, to speak for that. That would, in essence, would still be a violation of the code, so that instead of when you volunteer, you don't turn your paper in late, instead of suspending, we do that. And so in terms of the red language for the yellow language for M, the copying from Title IV, as I mentioned before, I heard some concerns about that language exactly, which is why now knowing what the intent is, I think we can very easily craft language that will satisfy the goal
and narrow
it to say, in essence, if you just violate your JA sanctions or 6.4 sanction, it's still a violation of the code.
So, I mean, I could do much substantive discussion. I mean,
absolutely, no, please.
Let me describe why I mean, part of it is the McBride case itself, which was, you know, he was charged with disclosing document that he was told informally or whatever it was, but certainly not in a standardized university format, was confidential. And his argument was, if in that kind of format and so forth and so on, you had to consent, agree to confidentiality. And that didn't happen. then he was free to do whatever he wanted with the document. That, in effect, you know, looking at this, it was the failure of the official to state clearly what it was that lawful order was, which had been, if it had been confidential and it agreed to it, then there'd be clear violation. If this is drawn in such a way, Michelle, you won't say that it was, in order to bring the McBride case under the code, that I'm really opposed to that. But what bothers me, and aside from the specific application to the McBride case, what bothers me about this is, you know, whether or not the policy has been issued in the standardized university format, boy, that looks awfully wrong. If you're going to be issuing orders, there should be some kind of regularity to it. In the McBride case, the official did not ask for consent or any recognition of the request for confidentiality, and in fact just went on to other things, presuming, you know, or whatever what she thought, presuming that compliance would be required. This language looks awfully broad from that perspective.
Absolutely, Richard. You did a very good job of summarizing a lot of concerns about that I've heard about why that language in the maintenance regulations public order could be seen troubling. In that section, I argue it makes more sense because for public order, those are generally considered to be safety issues, and again, there are actually legal requirements the university has. But in this case, for this change, I think this is exactly why we're going to, that language is going to be narrowed to affect the act. The action of essence, after, as Marcella just said, the goal is to narrow it so that violating a sanction from the JA's office or under 6.4, in essence, to make sure that that is a violation, so we will be narrowed, in essence, the language as written now will be narrowed to just that, to avoid that, to avoid those exact concerns you just raised.
So, I mean, and that's our job.
Yes. Yes.
So, one of the key things here, and it's lawful order is probably not problematic. That's general. But standardized university format, that needs to be generally. That's something, you know, so that we have expectations on both sides, you know, for those who are affected by the order and those who issue it. So that they have some idea, both of them, when such a situation exists and such an act. So the question is there anything, is this in the standardized university format? Is there anything that code standardized university formats?
That would be policy, I want to say 1.1, which is the policy on policies. So there's a policy for that. And the essence, so that would go through the PAG, which is the Policy Advisory Group, which the UA has a seat on. But I think a lot of the issues you're getting at are excellent issues, and they will be brought, and we need to have these discussions in much more detail when we look at the holistic code overhaul. That being said, the goal for this is to rectify, frankly, I think a draconian current version of the code that is simply untenable, to fix it, put the proverbial last Band-Aid on it, and then send this off, and then we can have a discussion when we look through the code holistically about, for regulations of rules of public order, what do we need, what are our legal obligations, and to have that discussion when we get to that part, because at this point we're just looking for, in essence, the last crack through to make sure the code is stable enough that we're not going to have a crisis that's going to interrupt us when we're trying to look at the holistic picture. Does that make sense?
So, for example, I'm not sure I'm okay with this, but we can amend this and say, let's take out whether or not, and say when.
Richard, if I may be blunt, we're going to scrap that language entirely and just write something that says along the lines of,
okay,
to violate an order from the JA's office for 6.4 as procedurally given, et cetera, is a violation of the code. we're just gonna, because that is the, that's the issue we're trying to fix. We're gonna scrap this language just for now, because as you can see, the discussion here is extensive, but just to make sure that we're addressing it, and then we can, when we get to the overhaul, then we can, actually we're going to have a long session, I imagine, on that issue. Does that make sense?
This is no longer operative.
Right. Yes. if it went away, however different.
That I would send other language to.
The other piece that I think goes along with this discussion as well, and I think should be added to that kind of low-hanging fruit category, is that definition of the university official. Mm-hmm. Because in particularly in this context, it should be really clear when the person is a university official capable of making these changes. Because it came up twice, actually, in the McBride case in two separate areas. One is the person who gave the instruction a university official, then therefore capable of giving an instruction that is applicable under the law? The other is completely separate, Mitch McBride issue, is who is given the authority to enforce, do enforcement on the code of conduct. So we want to be clear on what the definition of that group is. And I think we have the language already, because I went through the whole code trying to find what does this term mean. And under Article 2, Section C1B, towards the bottom.
Can we give a page number, I'm sorry?
It's page 4. Near the bottom, it talks about, it's kind of unrelated, but it talks about enforcement. So it says, exercise the law enforcement responsibilities vested in the Board of Trustees and exercised by its authorized peace officers. And to me, that sounds like the definition of who is allowed to do enforcement. So what I suggest is that we borrow from that to somewhere early on identify who we're talking about when we're talking about.
I agree that the one asterisk on that is if we're the current section based off of McBride here that doesn't narrow the scope, the current language that says to violate the lawful order of your official only applies to rules of public order, and because of that, to change those areas we need the consent of the trustees, the board itself. So my question, of course, is if we're trying to do low-hanging fruit before, I mean, if we do the code overall, we're going to need the board's approval because we're likely going to at least look at, and again, even if we don't, I would like to, again, if we're making a big change, we're going to need to involve them at least at the highest level. So in terms of being that there is a legal term of art for what it is, and it only came up in that case, and even McBride hearing narrowed it to only public order issues, which are even less common, I agree it's maybe. I just actually noted it down for when we look at the overall. But in terms of the amount of hoops you have to jump through to get that fixed, considering we're going to go through and, in essence, refix it anyways, we can certainly consider it, but just something that.
Okay. Again, we've been talking a lot about clarity of the code so that people can understand it.
Yes.
I'm a relatively intelligent person and was having a very difficult time understanding who does this refer to. And it makes a big difference since we use it throughout the code.
Absolutely. And it's almost. Again, not as a band-aid, because it is a legal term of art, you may even be able to put an FAQ somewhere, or even,
sure.
I know the JDOC has a just FAQ on general, or even somewhere there's a note saying, all universal official is a legal term of art, that means X, just so,
sure.
So that
for somebody who doesn't have a legal background.
Yeah, just to provide the information so we're not going to sit there, and so in essence, we're still solving an issue, but we can go through and actually fix the issue.
Yep.
Just for clarity, you're saying that it's too broad, right?
I just don't, it doesn't have a definition. It's not that it's too broad. It's that I didn't know who it referred to. And it should be really clear to everyone who fits into these definitions. Otherwise, you can't actually understand what the purpose is.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest concerns with the current code is that if you have legal training, it's pretty clear. If you don't, which is the vast, vast majority of people, it's not clear. And that's also why we are. I think that's the guiding principle when we go through and do a deep dive is the bones is, I think the bones of the code are excellent. The question is how you make it so that John and Jane Doe can understand it.
Fair enough.
But seeing that person, it was actually one of the last words where we lost our time.
Yeah, this is sort of to put on the table for when we do that deep dive, because because I agree that this language generally, as it appears in Title IV, is really a problem. You know, just it really clashes with our culture, right? This kind of like, you will do this, or, you know. But I just want to note that, unless I'm reading it wrong, in Title III, it incorporates as a violation of Title III anything listed in Title IV, Article II, which includes this.
My understanding of that, which hopefully that I'm wrong, is that it means that to violate the rules of public order is to violate the code. It means that the JA can enforce those, but my understanding is it doesn't incorporate the actual text from that in terms of the, in essence, so as the McBride hearing said, you're not necessarily taking that section and applying it to our. So that section, stating myself, is not a violation of Article 3.
Okay.
But if you violate it in the context of an Article 4 situation, then it would then come into Article 3 as a violation of the code generally, if I understand that correctly.
Wait,
absolutely,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, I think with the public precedent that the University Hearing Board is at, that Title IV has to be only for a Title IV offense. That language is a little bit discongruent. But the reason why I think that provision is still in there is because technically under Title IV, I don't adjudicate the cases. The president adjudicates them or their designee. And so I think Title IV in of itself is a very odd provision because it's talking about jurisdiction over licensees and invitees, which nowadays, I'm not, Beyonce's over here at a concert and you know, she's trespassing, I'm not sending her to the JA's office, right? Like, she would get, the CUPD would escort her and do that. So in many ways, some of the language in Title IV is required by New York law. And so some of the reason we can't change some of the public order ones because it was by a newer amendment. But I think when we started talking about the code revision of itself, you know, I think there's a point where we need to talk about, is Title IV even applicable?
And actually, if I just have one other thing, I think that when we do this kind of broad view of the code, it would be very useful to get some history of how these rules of public order were brought in, because we used to refer to them as RAMBO instead of RAMPA, because they were kind of in the sort of stealthily put in right before the summer after there had been a lot of activism on campus. And so I think that that's one of the reasons why you say this thing doesn't seem to fit. Because it was brought in times of stress. I think that kind of history would be really useful for us.
Absolutely. I actually have records, or a very limited number of records, from the regulation of the committee, the trustees committee, that report on, in essence, the armed takeovers, which formed a lot of the basis of what became the code. So I have access to some of that. I know the office of some of these archives, and I know the university archives has public visible upon request boxes and boxes of materials. I agree. We need to look at that,
and
because
this was later. You know,
yes.
I was here at the time and mm-hmm. furious because it was adopted like, in the summer when
yes.
it was gone.
Well, and just thinking broadly in terms of mm-hmm. having taken torts last semester, I believe New York actually collapsed the designation between invitee and licensee, which were there. So again, that would also, again, that's completely legalistic. But again, New York may also not have updated other parts of the law, but if New York has changed their laws or other areas, again, this is somewhere we need to work hand in glove with council office if we want to touch it. But to be aware of that moving forward, just because Title IV in general is there by law, but it is in some ways incongruent with the rest of the code, and the really is in the spirit of the code.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, we have exhausted our time for the housekeeping code changes. We'll have a considerable amount of time next week to handle those. Bill?
I just have information. Was there anything about the student organization timeline that people wanted me? Because I can send the COFI language to some of the other schools with their non-compliance language, but was there anything that my office can look to kind of bring back to this committee for anything with the student organizations? I don't know if anyone had any thoughts about that, but I just want to make sure we quickly move on that.
To clarify, that is the change that simply extends the suspension timeline from up to a year to up to 5 years.
With the, also the statute of limitations
being
organizations being extended to 3 years. So.
Yeah, I actually had a question about the 3 year. Is the need for the 3 calendar years as opposed to the way it's done in the rest of the up to 3 years total, but it's 1 year and then or 6 months from the time that a complaint is filed, right, and no more than 3 years. Isn't that the other one?
No, I only have 1 year with the exception of fraud and
okay,
a couple
so
other charges.
Fraud.
Or
okay.
With good cause.
So. Okay, so it's only for fraud that you get the extension. Okay. And so the need for 3 years here is because of what you talked about last time in terms of a pattern that emerges. Okay. And then in terms of, I was never comfortable from last time with this 5 year, going from 1 year to 5 years for suspension. I understood the reasoning people had, but it seemed to me that it was just overbleep. It just seemed a bit dramatic, and I realized that, you know, the hope is that it'll only be something like 5 years would only be used in the worst cases. But it just, I don't really quite, I don't agree with the idea that you kind of clean out the problem people and then start again in 5 years.
So I think I get what you're saying, but I think the alternative is removing them entirely. That really is the other option. It's not that we're going to
be 3 years.
Yeah, but which is valid. That I think is valid. I think the idea of extending it longer than a year, giving some flexibility to that for something that's more severe than a year, but less severe than you go away forever, is valid. But a discussion about where exactly to draw that line in the middle, I think, is valid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The cleaning house, having older set of people, you can require that separately suspension. So 5 years is a lot. You know, it's like 2 years on work that you need with normal term. And even at the end of 5 years, if your goal is to clean the house, there's still something for there. So, you know, it's the time is not squarely aligned with the purpose. If the purpose is you think you have a bad fraternity and a bad people that are self-replicating themselves, then it's the membership you're trying to make, not the time. And so that.
Yeah. Michelle's second speaker was just to say, is there any dissent to, in essence, going off the agenda to continue this discussion? Hearing none, Michelle, you're next.
Yeah, so the 5 years, again, as I mentioned, is best practice. You look in Greek life, you look at other campuses. In the 5 years, I know that, you know, the turnover is usually typically 4 years, right? So you look at, you get the freshman all the way through. But one of the reasons why 5 years is sometimes an option for conduct that's egregious but doesn't need to be dismissal of the organization, it's because the reputational risk of the organization changes on the community as well. So let's say you suspend an organization, let's say the chess club, like they are just awful. And let's say, you know, you suspend them for 5 years. And so what happens not only with the 4 years is that whole membership cycles. Then you have a new freshman class who could restart the organization who has no stigmatization about the chess club. So it's also a turnover of university perceptions. And so, that's my understanding of why 5 years is historically best practice. And my understanding is that the fraternity and sororities do that with the recognition policy after 5 years. So not only is it marrying the code language, it'd be marrying OSFL, it'd be marrying best practices, and then it would set up an organization. Again, I think it's a sanction that doesn't get, you wouldn't do it very often. Because if you're looking at 5 years, you're probably looking at behavior that probably needs to consider doing dismissal. But I think 5 years does make sense.
You've suspended the fraternity for 5 years.
I have.
And you've done
at a previous institution, not here.
Okay.
not here.
But it's not here.
Well, fraternity.
Yes.
Okay. But the suspicion. That the building would be empty at some point in that situation.
So what happens in that situation is a couple things. One, you can have a new organization rent. And so usually it depends on different campuses, and I haven't looked into it too deeply because it's not my jurisdictional area. So it depends on who owns the building. So either buildings are owned by the university, and the property is used by the university, and they lease it to the national headquarters. Sometimes the land is owned by the university, and the house is owned by either the fraternity or the house corporation. Another example is that an alumni owns the organization and the property and then leases it to. And so what usually happens is when you have organizations closed, whether for conduct reasons or just because they can't get numbers and they're not competitive anymore, is that whoever owns the building will sometimes sublease with another organization who wants to come onto campus and says, you know, you would only be competitive if you have a house. We have this house that's empty. We'll lease it to you for the length of it, allow you to build your own property, and then in 4 years when we come back, y'all will move on the house. My understanding is that there's a fraternity building on this campus that a fraternity closed that was turned into graduate housing. And so it's very unlikely that the building would sit fallow. I think there's a need for it. But usually you look at other campuses, and I would say for a campus that's a heavy Greek, heavy house, that's usually what happens with them.
And actually, I can actually provide context. Actually, I'm not Greek, but the history of Cornell classes, as far as the interesting that we talked about this, Cornell actually in the late 20th century, ended up going through and bought up a lot of Greek houses around here. So the one that Michelle mentioned it's actually now, since it's dominated by law school students, because it's right next to law school, it's 13 South Avenue. There's also another house that is being rented, it's on West Campus, the organization, I believe it was Greek, that was removed from campus. The national organization is renting the house to Cornell, which is now as attached to Alex Cook House. So it's being used for undergrad housing on West Campus. So generally, an empty building helps no one in terms of just revenue. And if Cornell owns it, I am certain we would use it considering we are housing constrained. And even as you saw with the other organization that wasn't, it's not Cornell owned, but it's being leased to Cornell to be used as housing.
So it's plausible, as I understand it, that a fraternity could be suspended, say, for 5 years, but the same people are living in the same country.
Yes, because there's no, I can't, violate people's assembly, and then it would become a landlord-tenant issue. I've seen on some campuses where if the university owns the house and a fraternity has been removed, they relocate students to, completely kind of do as you mentioned. But the idea is that the organization can do so. It could be.
I mean, it's our purposes.
You might have actually asked a question, Richard. In terms of, I understand your concerns, but I'm wondering, and I know we had talked about, again, we want to add guidance to the hearing boards, either in an appendix or a plenary docket that goes with the hearing board procedures. Is this something that you think would help address that, and that, in essence, you have a 5 years exists for the most egregious situations where we don't want, in essence, say goodbye forever by expelling you, but we want to go as far as we can there because of, as Michelle mentioned, the culture stigma or whatever, and that in other scenarios where such an extreme sanction is not necessary, the hearing board, A, always has discretion, but B, is empowered to say, you can go 3 years, 3.5 years again, to almost provide that clarity to say, we're leaving almost to have it as, you have this as an option as opposed to dismissal if we really want it, but if you're going to go to 5 years, the question, of course, is, should we just dismiss? But do you think that would help your concerns or just trying to engage your where we are in this.
That helps our concerns. We have a clear idea of what the purpose is. And those are my questions. I'm learning here. I don't know how this thing works. As I said before last time, I'm a little wary of blanket versus individual responsibility and all of this kind of business. That's something we can sort out later. Otherwise, if people are comfortable with this, I'm comfortable with it. But I do want to explore, I do like clear intent, behind a rule of procedure. And when they're not perfectly aligned, then I'd like to see that discussion.
I think
this change is better than what currently exists, but I think as we look at the thing overall, we can start. I think we're going to spend a lot of time looking at exactly how to draw those lines better. But I, I, think that the change that's being asked for right now is an improvement over what exists by a good shot.
Yes. And noting that we have 5 minutes left and we do have an executive discussion scheduled, but I think it's actually just that I need to convey it to the committee in private. But the last point on the that Michelle had brought on this and had put into the in her well, housekeeping changes was in terms of considering the definition of student in the code. I know we had a very good discussion about that in the spring. I know actually Risa had a lot of good points. So in terms of languages written, I know we had talked about how it seems to balance, in essence, for the students who are high school students, understand they're high school students, but if they were to come onto campus on their off hours and protest, in essence, to allow them as much protection, as many protections as are allowable to ensure that we're not chilling them, while still understanding and balancing the fact they are not truly Cornell students. I know there was some talk in terms of how the language could do that, knowing that, that we're essence out of time. I would actually ask the committee to consider that, and Grace, because you raised that, if you have any language you think would work, so that we can have a discussion next week, work with risk management, hopefully can put this in with, so yeah, it's another issue where it hasn't become an issue yet, but I'd rather be proactive, again, considering that a code overall could take a while, and actually should take a while, again, to be able to put that in with the last crack before we, in essence, start working forward. I think it's valuable, but that being said, I don't want to rush something, because that would, yeah, the negative consequences of that also are to be avoided. But that being said, noting the time, I'm going to ask to go into executive session so that we can discuss information that was provided to me, that I had received from counsel's office. So in that case, we're going to, as I mentioned, the reason that we're going to turn off the recording. You are all good. Thank you so much for clarifying. We appreciate it. And also, for the copy of the code, I'm hoping to keep making these house copies so we can actually, again, if you'd like to take it, please do, but we'd like to keep some of them here so that next meeting we can have them to be utilized. Let's keep them in our materials. Possible. So thank you so much. And then once the clerk is clear,